All right. Hey. Good morning, you guys. Well, we're back, right? 1 year. Seems to go by pretty quick. Seems like yesterday. But good to be here. Good to be speaking with you guys this morning. You know, finding joy in the trials, that is, that's one of the things, one of the, fundamental doctrines, teachings that we have to be able to communicate effectively to get the message out, especially to not only the young Christians, so they have a reasonable expectation of what they've come to, but also in the long haul. We had Mark Miller up on Wednesday night. He mentioned his message, talked a little bit about discouragement, and that's a big deal. That is a big thing with people. As they go along, the hardness of the way, it's when we really, the test really begins. But having, again, a reasonable expectation, a biblical expectation, is to what is it that we can expect? What is this all about? Is it an easy road? Some people think you become a Christian so you can avoid hassles. Become a Christian, you're not going to have any problems anymore. Where in the world did you ever get that idea? It's not biblical. It is not. Neither Testament would support that, but many pulpits would. A lot of people that get the people to come in is because they're selling Christianity as, a place for you to find a cushy spot to sit down and let go and let God, and not much expected from you, nor will you suffer anything. Again, you'll never get that from the Scripture. In James 1, we're told to count it all joy, verse 2. Count it all joy, brethren, when you fall into various trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces patience or endurance. But let the patience have its perfect work, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking nothing. Now, count it joy when you fall into these various trials. Now, in 1 Peter, Peter drives home the point, number one, yes, we have a great hope. And we have it's a living hope, verse 3 says, because of the resurrection of Jesus from the dead, to an inheritance incorruptible and undefiled that does not fade away, reserved in heaven for us. Well, that's positive. That sounds nice. We who are kept by the power of God through faith for salvation, ready to be revealed in the last time. And in this we do greatly rejoice, for sure. Though now, for a little while, if need be, you've been grieved with various trials, that the genuineness of your faith, being much more precious than gold that perishes, though it's tested by fire, may be found to praise, honor, glory at the revelation of Jesus Christ. The faith has to be tested to see if it's the real deal. To see if you're genuine, or if you're just posing, if you're a phony. Now, in 1 Peter 4:12, he makes it clear, you're going to be tested. And he says the trial will be a fiery trial. Beloved, don't think it strange concerning the fiery trial, which is to try you as though some strange thing happened to you. But rejoice. Be happy to the extent that you partake of Christ's sufferings, that when His glory is revealed, that you may also be glad with exceeding joy. Happy, joy. The trial, the fiery trial, which is to try you. Don't think some strange thing is like, well, what's happening? It should not be a surprise. It's supposed to be that way. That should be our expectation. I expect to be tested. I expect to be tried in various ways. Now, sometimes we reap what we sow. Sometimes a difficult situation that we have to work through is because of our own doing. Maybe we didn't mean for it to be that way. You know, sometimes in the learning curve, once you become a Christian, you still make mistakes because you're coming from being fleshly minded to spiritual minded. You're not zapped in the immersion here. Now, the change is to take place, the transformation of the renewing of the mind, but it's a process. Well, if you go, when you go in the tank, you're basically carnal minded. You're going to come out carnal minded. You will have your sins remitted if you did that according to knowledge and by faith. And you will receive the gift of the Holy Spirit. But like Peter says then, as newborn babes, you need to desire that pure milk of the Word in order to grow. Not taller, but stronger, spiritually speaking. And the transformation of the renewing of the mind begins. Well, when you walk right out of here, right from the baptismal tank, and you have to walk into your life, and you're back into your, whether it's, you know, back to in your own family situation, your work environment, and all the challenges you were facing before, and the people that, especially the people that you had to deal with before, if you were working with a bunch of idiots, you know, a bunch of bozos, they're still there. They didn't quit because you became a Christian. So what do you think is going to happen on Monday morning when you show up? The same challenges, the same place where you left off on Friday is where you'll pick up. And more than likely, pretty much expect, you will act in accordance with your mindset, previous mindset, because you haven't transformed it yet. Now, you might have some inclination that you should start to be different. You know, hopefully if you were taught, properly through a series of Bible studies that brought you to the point of making an informed decision, you'll realize it's not to be business as usual. But here's the challenge. You're going to get that understanding in your head first. There's a little bit of difference between, or distance between your head and your heart. I'm talking about the heart, you know, that is pumping there. But I'm talking about your core, your operating system, the real you. That hasn't gotten the word yet. That message hasn't filtered down through there yet. So you will find yourself pretty much as a Romans 7 man, now delighting in the law of the Lord, but finding yourself doing things you should not do and failing to do what you should do. Even though that Romans 7, according to verse 5 there, that's kind of the backward glance of when we were yet in the flesh, Paul says. But a new babe in Christ will present as a Romans 7 man until his faith catches up with his spiritual reality. So we have to grow. So in the process of growth, we're going to be tested. So sometimes we're going to suffer some things because we still make poor decisions. And hopefully we realize, oh man, I blew that. Yeah, that's why I'm in this situation now. I blew that. That's not God punishing you. That's just the spiritual principle that won't be changed, altered, not only for worldly people, but for people of faith. You'll reap what you sow. You sow to the flesh, you reap the results of that. Corruption, destruction. You sow to the Spirit, you'll reap life everlasting. And benefits along the way. You know. But sometimes the Apostle Paul said, look, all those who will live godly in Christ Jesus are going to suffer persecution. Jesus said, you will be hated by all men for my name's sake. So part of it just comes with the territory. Expect it. Expect it. And let's get one thing straight too. These trials will be serious trials. We are not talking about bad hair days. We are not talking about, oh, another Monday. We are talking about serious, serious trials. The darkness is thick. I mean, just think about all the sufferings that you know of, whether you've been there yourself or family members that you know of, or people, you know, as you see even on the news, you know, you see people that, you know, suffer all kinds of things, whether it's accident or illness or extreme poverty or oppression violence. I mean, it is, the darkness is great. And even though those external things like that sometimes, again, the darkness is great. But you know what? The darkness in our own heart is great. And that's where we're going to be dealing first in our lives personally. We have to deal with ourselves. Can't change the world. You know, God changes us. When you become a Christian, you're going to begin this process, as I've mentioned, to deal with the darkness in your own life. A process which I believe the Scriptures are quite clear. It'll be like going through a crucifixion. I mean, the Scripture states very clearly, Jesus said, look, if you are going to follow me, number one, deny yourself. This is what's required. Denying yourself and taking up your cross. That instrument of death. Each one of us will have to bear that cross daily. In the immersion, the Apostle Paul does say, we are crucified with him in this death. Buried with him in the immersion. And that just like as Christ was raised up from the dead by the glory of the Father, even so we should walk in the newness of life. Our old man being crucified, that the body of sin might be done away with or rendered inoperative. And clearly, he who is dead is freed from sin. However, as I said a minute ago, our faith has to catch up with that spiritual reality. I appreciate how Brother Jay likes to bring out the present positive affirmatives of the way the Scriptures are put together. It won't seem like your old man has been put away or rendered inoperative, because you'll find yourself still acting out, maybe according to the flesh. But our new potential and our new birth is yes. Shall we continue to sin that the grace may abound? No. Oh no, that's not the plan. It does have to be put away. But you got to know that first. You can't do this by accident. This is going to be done according to knowledge. And so that's why we begin as babes to partake of that milk of the Word. We begin to grow and the eyes of the understanding are opening up. We're beginning to see how this works. And we begin to attack these challenges, these trials according to knowledge, praying for wisdom and understanding, and God's right there to help us along. Paul says in Galatians 5:24, they that are Christ have crucified their flesh with the affections and the desires. Really? Well, we have to examine ourselves. Is that our case? I believe, as Paul brings out, that past tense means they've done it. Expected to do it. And it can be done. They that are Christ have crucified, have put away those deeds of the body. By what? 5:16, Galatians. You walk in the Spirit, you won't fulfill the lust of your flesh. So you have divine assistance. But doesn't mean it's escape. You still got to go through that. Now, obviously, this morning, I get to open up by talking with the guys. And I believe, and I don't think anybody here would disagree, look, we have a special role as the males in the church. Leadership, that mantle falls on us, whether in the home, heads of our households, or in the assembly. And we have to get this first. If we're going to be leaders and be examples, we want to, you know, basically lead by example. If we don't do it, and especially as the years go by, I said when I started talking this morning, you know, looking to see you guys again, it seems like yesterday, but it was a year ago. And if you were here, and I think most of you were, the year before that, I was here. And the year before that, You know, it's one thing to be a babe and not be skillful in the word of righteousness or necessarily doing such a good job walking in the Spirit as we're called to do. But the brethren generally will cut you some slack knowing that you're a babe. But you know, as the years go by, expecting more of us, right? Just like with the kids, you know when kids are little, they act like kids. The Apostle Paul said when he was a child, he thought, spake, and understood as a child. But when he became a man, he put away childish things. So there's a time when people might overlook some things. But as time goes by, we need to be examples. This needs to be shining forth from us. I believe that's the other part of the theme here, that we would be lights in an uncertain world. That falls on us, first and foremost. If we don't get this, then why would he put it into our lives? How can you expect anyone else that's supposed to be following you, whether in the home or in the assembly, when you don't do it yourself? And look, Jim Brady, a long time ago at New York Family Camp, he shared a message. I always remembered this example that Jim Brady gave about when people don't do what they're supposed to do. He said, number one, the reason why people don't do what they're supposed to do, they didn't know they were supposed to do it. Well, you can clear that up by telling them, you know you're supposed to do this. Oh, okay. The second reason why somebody wouldn't do what they're supposed to be doing is, especially now they know they're supposed to do it, they don't know how to do it. No problem. Tell them. Explain. Show them how to do it. Now they know how to do it. Well, the third reason why somebody doesn't do what they're supposed to be doing, maybe they're not capable of it. You know, you do have to consider that. Especially with kids and stuff. You know, you got to give them things age appropriate, right? You know, there's some things that a kid, they're not capable of understanding and doing that. You know, they're not capable. Some people might not be physically capable. I mean, my 90-year-old father-in-law is not going to be up shingling the roof. He's going to have to get someone else to do it. He knows how to do it. He used to do it, but he can't do it now. He's 90 years old. So they're not capable. And the last reason why somebody doesn't do what they should be doing is they just don't want to. Don't want to. They know they're supposed to. They know how to do it. They're capable of doing it. Don't want to. God provides us all the information we need, telling us what we are to be, what we're to do, how to do it. And He doesn't give us anything that we're not capable of doing. He'll judge us individually, obviously. Each one of us can be highly successful. And if we don't, and on that final day, when we stand before the judgment seat of Christ to receive for the deeds done in the body, we might be standing there without that wedding garment. And when he asks, friend, how did you get in here without a wedding garment, clothed in that righteousness that we're supposed to have? Well, it says in the context, the dude was speechless. Speechless. Because there is no response to that question. Not a good response. Speechless. I know I've shared this story before. When I was in the Marine Corps, I fell for rifle inspection, one day. I was in boot camp. And, oh, man, I mean, they used to do bad things to us. It wasn't legal, but they did it. And I was in the front row, and I was probably six or seven guys down, and he's coming, the senior drone instructor, inspecting weapons, and always something's going to be wrong with the weapon, with you. And they're asking you questions. You know, what's your first general order? You know, who's first comm down of the Marine Corps? What was the Battle of Chapultepec? Who's Jesse Fuller? And you better have, what are the three life-saving steps? And while they're inspecting your rifle, you got to be answering these questions. And I hear these guys, sir, the private don't know. You don't know. Boom, boom, boom. They knock them down, kick them, and think, oh, geez, I know that. Well, I know that answer. So I'm thinking, and I always had a hard time pulling that operating rod back on that M14. It had a big spring in it, but I was scared to death. And here he comes. So I thought, okay, I'll pull that. You know, you got to pull that rifle up, boom, boom, and rack that bolt back, lock it, do a quick check, and you hold it. And you're not allowed to look at your drill instructor. He's standing right in front of you, like within 8 inches of your face. That Smokey the Bear hat brim is right there, and them beady eyes, man. But you're not allowed to look at them. You're not allowed to put your scummy eyeballs on that drill instructor. So you better have that 1,000-yard stare right past him. And what you watch for is his shoulders to flinch. Because the minute his shoulders flinch, that means he's coming up to grab that, boom, that rifle that fast. He's got it. You better let go of it. You better not be still holding on to it when he's slapping it out of your hands. That's why you watch for his, the minute his shoulders flinch, drop your hands. The rifle will be right here in midair for a split second because he's going to have it. So you're just staring past him, and when them shoulders flinch, you just boom, and he's got it. Boom, boom. So he come in front of me. He does that facing movement, you know. And I bring it up, you know, and I got it. And I'm holding this thing, and his shoulders flinch. I let go, pop, he's got it. He's looking at it. All of a sudden, he froze. And he's like, what in, I can't tell you what he said, is this? And he shoves it right in my face. And here was a rusty thumbprint on that operating rod, on that M14. Orange in the bright sunlight. Those rifles were for drill. And they've been cleaned 1,000,000,000 times or something. There was no bluing left on those rifles. And so in that hot Southern California environment, in those dark, dingy, gloomy Quonset huts that we were in, I apparently had touched, as I was cleaning it, that operating rod with my thumb, and it oxidized very quickly, and out in that bright sunlight, unbeknownst to me, the rust appeared. I mean, it was a perfect thumbprint, an orange one. What is this on your rifle, boy? Man, he had it right in my face. So I wasn't going to say, sir, the private don't know, because I'd done seen what happened. The private didn't know. I mean, they were laid out on the ground. So I said, sir, Russ, sir, what's it doing on your rifle, boy? The question, what is rust doing on this rifle in a Marine Corps rifle inspection? There is no answer to that question. Not in heaven or on earth. None. I was speechless. I was trying to think of something really intelligent to say rather than, sir, the private don't know, sir, because I knew that was instant death. That would send him into action immediately if I said that. So I was trying to think of something really clever to say that would explain rust on my rifle. About that time, bam, he hit me right in the head with it. Because he's holding it like this. And what is called a butt stroke is when they go, bam. It's a big, heavy wooden stock on that M14 with a steel butt plate. And he hit me right in the side of the head with it, which knocked me right back through the ranks of the other guys lined up waiting for their turn to be inspected, knocking me flat on my back. But I jumped back up because I wasn't supposed to be laying on the ground. I was supposed to be at attention. So I jumped back up to the position, couldn't get my eyes to focus, and he's still holding it like this. He said, you better answer me, boy. And I'm still trying to get my marbles lined up and to think what to say, and bam! He did it again and knocked me right out. Man, I woke up. I'm laying on the ground. I didn't know where I was at. He was already inspecting the next guy. I'm laying flat on my back in the dirt. Getting up, and he saw me moving. Get in the pit, boy. Bends and thrusts on that rifle till I get tired. So I'm in the pit doing squat thrusts on top of my rifle, burying it in the dirt with my kicking the dirt up. But I mean, I had me a lump. I mean, there's just no answer to that question. There will be no excuse for us on that day. If we show up without a wedding garment, we will give an account. That question will be answered. What will you give in exchange for your soul? That's a reasonable question. It will be answered. It will be answered by us. But just like I give that military boot camp example. Oh, by the way, I just will also say, you know, that was illegal to do that. That was illegal then. It's still illegal today. They're not supposed to do that. They're not supposed to hit you. But they didn't care. The war was going on back then, the Vietnam War. And they were really more concerned about getting you home, actually, believe it or not. Purging out all the weakness so that you would survive in what you are going to have to face if you ended up 13 months in country in the Vietnam War. Those guys acted like they were crazy, but they weren't as crazy as you would think. They had to transform. In our case, we had like 75 guys, I think, when we started day one. We graduated 35. You go through a process. It's going to be a trial. It's going to purge out the fair weather boys. It's intense. It's supposed to be. But so is Christianity. Christianity, in fact, not just Christianity, God's people are clearly identified in both Testaments as armies. Read the first chapter of the book of Numbers. It lists the tribes of Israel as armies. They were a fighting force. They were organized that way by God. Why? Well, because they were going to go to war. In order for them to be blessed in their blessed new life, they were going to have to fight. They were going to have to take that land. God put the sword in their hand and said, "Go forth. I will go with you." But the sword was in their hand. I thought about that many times. You know, God certainly had the ability, the power to just simply give them that land. In fact, He could have drove the inhabitants out of the land flowing with milk and honey by just simply going, boo, you know, or do like He did. Sometimes He sent hornets. Man, them hornets would get them out of there in a big hurry. He put the fear of them of Israel in them people. And it says He also hardened their hearts so that they would stay and fight so they could be destroyed. I mean, this is all God's action, man. But He put the sword in their hand. Why would He do that? Well, we had a saying back in the day, for those who fought for it, freedom has the taste the protected will never know. That's just a fact. Freedom has the taste the protected will never know. They'll never understand that. I'll tell you what, if you are a New Testament Christian and you make it, when you show up to report in, you will not be the same person. This trial is designed to transform us. It's the transformation and renewing of the mind. Colossians 3:10 tells us we're transformed or changed according to knowledge. Into what specifically? Into the image of the Son of God. Man, the likes of some of us, are you kidding? I mean, us from the past? Yeah. God can do that, but you will not be the same. And you shouldn't want to be the same. And for those who fought for it, those who fought the good fight, who kept the faith and finished the course, will not be the same. You can't go through that and be the same person that got on the bus to report. It just doesn't work that way. I'll be completely honest with you. Some guys lost their minds. Now, whether they lost it in some of the stuff that you can be put through, whether in our case, even though it was 12 weeks of training, the brutality was designed in their mind to bring about the changes they were looking for. It was illegal to do it. They did it anyway. One of the more famous ones actually happened in the 50s in the Marine Corps. It was called the McKeon Death March. Staff Sergeant McKeon marched 15, a bunch of recruits into the swamps in South Carolina at Parris Island, drowned them in the quicksand. That was a big controversy. Congress got involved, brought the boom down. So for a while, they quit doing that kind of thing. But by the time the Vietnam War broke out, they were doing it again. Nowadays, they have a thing that's actually part of their training, which is legal, and it's called the crucible. And it's no accident that word ought to conjure up, especially in our minds, like, where'd they get that word from? Crucify, crucible, you know, kind of the same root, because that's exactly what it is. But right before the guys graduate, at least it's still my understanding, it's what they do today, you're going to go through, I don't know, 3 or 4 days of no food, no sleep, very, very, very intense. That's all designed to mess with your head. It's not your body. These young guys are tough. You know what I mean? I mean, they are tough. A lot of them guys, it's not a physical thing. Navy SEAL training, if you read about that or see anything about that, you know, those guys that go out there, they're tough, man. They're strong. But it's not about muscles. They're going to test their mind, their mental state. That's what Christianity is all about. We're not going to get our muscles tested in all this stuff. But we're certainly going to get our minds bent. I mean, everything the Lord calls us to do is contrary to what the natural man thinks. Loving people that hate you and praying for people that abuse you and giving up your cloak and getting smacked upside the head and turning the cheek and all that, that's not natural. That's not natural. Everything about the teachings of Christ is going to be contrary to the natural man. Those things that are highly esteemed in the eyes of men are an abomination to God. The Bible tells us, if we love the lust, you know, the world and the things in the world, lust of the eye, flesh, pride of life, that ain't of God, it's of the other guy. Everything about this is the exact polar opposite to what the natural man would think. Well, you think that's going to rub your fur the wrong way? Eventually, in some areas? Especially if you're married and you got a wife, well, she's going through the same thing. Now you got two people you're trying to blend together. They got all their baggage and their hang-ups and their fears, uncertainties, and doubts. This is a tremendous test. And all that battle is going to be fought just north of the roof of your mouth and just behind your eyeballs. It's not going to be your muscles. It's not whether you can run down the road for 15 miles. Man, it's going to happen right in the privacy of your own home and your quiet time while your gut is anguishing and twisting over who knows what. So nobody's going to escape it. You don't have to go in the military and go to Iraq or Afghanistan to experience that. You do it right here. Right in small town USA, you will be tested to the uttermost. In fact, it'd probably be easier to go to Baghdad and kill something. But to kill yourself, to fight that battle within, to put your old man down right here in small town USA, in the green tree. Now that's a fight, man. That's a struggle to get that right. Their whole purpose was to... They didn't need us to... You know, we had to run and do all that stuff. You know, because you got to be able to do that. But anyway, what it's all about, it wasn't a big weightlifting class for 12 weeks. Or a track meet. All that harassment and screaming and yelling and name-calling and making us do stupid things, you know. We'd be in the pits and my senior drill instructor would get a fire extinguisher, a water stream, and be squirting us with water while we're in the dirt. On your bellies, lady! On your backs! On your bellies! On your backs! While he's spraying us with water. And, of course, we're in the dirt. What happens is you put water in dirt. Turns to mud. Now we're covered with mud. all over us. Off my street, ladies! Into your beds, into the racks, in between the sheets. We got to go in there and get in our beds. White sheets, beds nice, smooth, made all tight. On your bellies, on your backs. We're twisting around like fish out of the water in our beds. Mud. Why? Can you take that? Day after day after day, screaming, yelling, harassment. We'd go through the chow line. We have to sound off our food. Meat! Potatoes! And them cooks would flap it on there. We weren't allowed to sit down and eat until everybody had their food. My senior would say, "You ladies hungry? Too bad! Get out! Get out!" We had to throw all that food away. Well, the mess chief reported that to higher echelons. And we heard the word through the scuttlebutt. He was told, "You can't be throwing all that food away." So we thought, well, good, at least we get to eat. Next day we're in there going through the chow line, calling out for the food. We got the food pile down there. And he said, "You ladies hungry, sir? Yes, sir. Too bad. Get out. Get out." And then he stood by the door where the trash can was at. "You better eat that food, boy." How am I going to eat a whole plate of food in 6 steps? "He don't care, but you're going to do it." So you know what you had to do? You'd be stuffing it in your face coming up there in the big line. Everybody's, you know. And all I had left, I had some Jell-O, man. I had some Jell-O still on my tray. I got up, he said, "You better eat that, boy." I took it, just smashed it in my face. That's all you had to do. I was wearing it. Just wear it. And go right out in that hot sun and start doing PT again. With Jell-O and all this stuff. Yeah, it's funny now. Trust me, it wasn't funny 44 years ago. Why do they do that? You know, sometimes it seems like that's all this is you're getting harassed constantly. At work or at home. These, you know, Paul said these fiery darts, right? Need the whole armor of God in order to survive. Those little fiery darts. You know, sometimes we think, well, yeah, if I had to hang by my thumbs in a third world dungeon, man, that'd be a trial. The trial's right here, man. The trial is right here. Sometimes it's right in the church building, in the men's meetings, or it's at home with the little woman or the neighbors, the co-worker, you name it. And it's stupid sometimes that makes all the difference in the world. That's the stuff that's hard to take. It's the stupid stuff. So they would harass us. Say, that's what the SEAL training is. You know, they don't beat them guys up. They put them in that ocean in the Pacific at Coronado. That water's freezing cold, man. Until they're almost hypothermic. I mean, I don't mean to be crude, put thermostats in their butts and some of that to watch their body temperature because they don't want them to die. But they're going to let them get about that close. They'll even drown them in the pool and resuscitate them. I took that, they call it water survival. Trust me, we had a different name for it. It was not survival, it was drowning class. They put us all in the swimming pool, fully clothed. The drill instructors walk along the pool deck, not letting you climb out. You put your hands to try to grab hold of the edge, they stomp on your fingers. You're supposed to pull your pants off while you're in the water, tie your bottoms of your pants together in a knot, and then cup your, they call them trousers, cup them on the water to create a bubble and hold on to that. Now, of course, it doesn't hold it for very long, but it'll hold, it's buoyant, obviously. You cup that, you capture that air. Now, you have 60 guys in a pool that think they're drowning all at the same time. Who's concentrating to get their pants off underwater and then try to tie the legs in a knot and do that stupid drill while they're climbing all over each other? Or you float with your head, your face in the water, with your, you know, just float. And when you need to breathe, you kick your feet and bring your arms down, grab some air. and then float again. The idea is if you're on a ship and it gets torpedoed, you may have to stay in that water for hours before help comes. They want you to be able to survive floating without a life jacket for hours. Well, a lot of guys get panicking, man, because they're drowning in this pool. And you try to climb out and they're stomping on your fingers. Just messes with your head, man. But it's supposed to be like that. If you can't endure that, some people could not. You know, first time I saw somebody flip out, I didn't know what it was. I never saw anybody do that before. First he started to laugh. Then he started to cry. And he just went completely whatever, falling apart. We were outside in formation. The drill instructor said, tie that fool up with your belts. I didn't know what was going on. I didn't understand it. Never saw anything like that. I thought, what's he doing? This man, you're going to get hit, get killed, you know. The DI is going to come over and beat the crap out of him because he's out of formation. He's rolling around crying and laughing and being... So pretty soon the Navy shows up because that's who our doctors... You know, Marines don't have like corpsmen, they're Navy corpsmen. They showed up with an ambulance and picked the guy up and took him away. That wouldn't be the first time we would see that. One time we didn't shoot so very well on the firing range. My senior drill instructor was hot. He was a mean guy, man. Staff Sergeant Lovano. Made us walk back to the barracks. None of you are to be in step, ladies. He wouldn't go marches. Shuffle your feet. Put your hats on backwards. Now, that's common today, but you were an idiot if you had your hat on backwards back then. Hats on backwards. Untuck your shirts. Shuffle your feet. You're a bunch of slobs. Can't shoot, so you might as well look like slobs. So we get to the barracks. It's hot in Southern California. When I give you the word, ladies, you will go inside. You will shut all the windows. Push all the racks up against the windows, all your bunk beds up against the windows. You will have on your T-shirt. You will have on your utility shirt, which is your normal heavy green shirt uniform. You will have on your PT sweatshirt. You will have on your shooting jacket. And for some of you that shoot, you know a shooting jacket's got pads and it's a jacket. You will have on your field jacket. You know, that's for winter time. Has a hood. You will put the hood up. You will put on your rubber poncho. So we got all these clothes on. T-shirt, shirt, sweatshirt, shooting jacket, wintertime field jacket with a hood up and a rubber poncho. We look like Michelin men standing in a squad bay in 90 degrees Southern California heat, windows all shut, in a big squad bay about as big as this building. Except the bunks are pushed up against the windows, and there's 60-some of us standing in there. First exercise, ladies, knuckles on the deck, toes on the top of the bunk. So we're doing handstands, knuckles on the deck, toes hooked over the top of the rack. While he's walking up and down the squad bay counting cadence. Just marching back and forth. While we're upside down doing handstands. Sweat, man, is coming down our sleeves and pooling around our knuckles on that deck. And I mean, pretty soon your arms are shaking and you're thinking, I don't know how much longer I can do this thing. And you see somebody collapse. Man, he shot like out of a cannon, man. He's right there. Get up! Boom! And he starts kicking. Get up! Get up! Boom! And you're thinking, oh, geez, man. I mean, you don't want to be falling down if that's what you get. Then he'd say he had a clock on one wall and a fire bell on the other wall. Under the clock, ladies. So off we're running wind sprints, man, with these rubber ponchos, man. That was a sight. 60 guys plow into the wall underneath that clock. Then under the fire bell. Under the clock. Boom, boom. Under the fire bell. We're running like crazy. All these clothes on. Sweat. Get in the showers, ladies. I mean, like this, all dressed. The showers were maybe this big. It wasn't for 60 people, but you could shower a dozen guys in there. It had spigots on the walls and had two silver poles in the middle that had spigots. So you could get guys showering on the walls and these things here. But man, you couldn't put 60 guys in there. He did. He jammed us in that shower. Knuckles on the deck, feet on the wall. I mean, we're upside down again, and some guys didn't have a wall to get their feet up on. We're squished in there, and then the guy turns on all the hot water spigots. Psh, psh, the steam was rolling. Guys were screaming. They were losing their minds. I mean, they were freaking out in that. That was a bad one. That was a real bad. I was not the same after that. I'll be honest with you. I didn't even know who I was. I thought, I'm done, man. I am really, really done. We were almost near graduation. We weren't done yet. I thought, you know what? I'm going to Canada. When I go home on leave, I ain't coming back to you, man. I am going to Canada. That was a bad one. A real, real bad one. There are things in life that can be that intense. Really, really intense. You see in the book of Acts, you see it in the scripture, people suffered many, many things. Now, again, don't misunderstand. I'm not trying to say that that is our biggest fear, is some physical thing happening to us, to have to live in a cave or to be, you know, like you see, martyred in some way. That may happen. It's happened in the past to some. That is not really where the battle is at. But the crucifixion of our old man that must take place will be intense. And if we keep getting down off the cross because we can't take it, I know, I think I shared before, you know, when I watched a documentary, I think it was on Discovery or something, where they did this crucifixion, or they wanted to know, how does crucifixion kill a person? It's not nails in the hands or in the feet. It hurts like heck, but that is not what kills them. It's the position. And they took this young guy, he was a volunteer in a laboratory, he was willing to do this, and they just tied him, basically. They put some rings and some cloth, they tied, put these rings on there, and they had a cross that had these hooks, so they just basically hooked him on it. It wasn't piercing him. And a leather pouch for his feet. Tuck his feet in a leather pouch, bend the knees, and leave him sitting in that position like that. All these wires on him to watch the effects on his body, how his body started to respond. Well, in that position, a young guy is strong. I mean, at first it didn't look like nothing was happening. But next thing you know, his heart rate starts to pick up. And the reason why his heart rate was picking up is because in that position, he wasn't getting a good exchange of air. He wasn't drawing in a good... Every once in a while, he would, you know, make a conscious, determined, inhale. You know, like, yeah, you know, okay, yeah. You know, get some O's in there, and, you know, because see what the heart's doing, it's picking up speed because it's realizing it doesn't have as much oxygen in the blood. So in order to get enough oxygen to the brain in a diminished volume of oxygen, will speed the delivery. So the heart beats faster to speed the delivery. Well, pretty soon, he's really starting to gasp because, again, these muscles, you need these intercostal muscles here, this diaphragm to go up and down in order to breathe properly. Well, muscles will fatigue. And in that position, that's part of the problem. He's struggling now to breathe. So the heart is really starting to go. And long story short, all the dials are starting to light up. Basically, what's going to happen, you're going to suffocate. What a way to go, huh? Why do you think they wanted the legs broke when they were on the cross? Let's break their legs so we can take them down from the cross. Because, see, they're pushing up with their legs to try to get that relief off the muscles here to breathe. Well, man, you start pushing on nails in your feet and like, yikes! And so you drop down off the pushing. and you're squirming around up there. So what would, you know, well, imagine that if that's what you're going through, trying to deal with your old way, your old man. You're being crucified. You're having to go through that transformation, that change. And many times I've used smoking or dieting as an example. You know, the pressure that builds. If you've ever tried to do something like that, you know, I've thrown the smokes away, you know, I'm done with that, you know. And, you know, next thing you know, I could just use a cigarette, you know. Especially if you eat something or have a cup of coffee and like, man. But no, I ain't gonna, no. Smoking. I quit, man. You know, the wife decides to go shopping for a few hours, get out of the house. What's happening? Pressure's building, right? Because you got this mindset, like, and you don't want to be that way no more. Or you're trying to lose the weight, and there's a plate full of chocolate chip cookies or something. Like, uh-oh. The pressure builds. Pretty soon, you just say, oh, man, I just have one. And that just opens the gate. I use that. Those are little examples. Now, think about some big things that you struggle with. Bad attitudes, lust, hatred, jealousy, fear. Whatever. Doesn't matter. It's not easy change. And if you seriously attempt to do so, you will have a tiger by the tail. Expectation. What can people expect? These fiery trials that are designed to test us, you know, those are to reveal the genuineness of the faith. So you will be tested. Satan knows your weakness. He examines your faith. He knows exactly what to bring right into your radar screen here, into your scope. Hey, Pilgrim, what do you think of this, man? Hey, Pilgrim, check this one out. Pilgrim, and if you got something you're stashing under the floor of your tent, something you're hiding, temptation brings it out. That's why Jesus was tempted in every way, but he said, the prince of this world is coming, but he has nothing in me. Jesus had it cleansed inside of his cup, right? He tells us that's the solution. Cleanse the inside of the cup and what? Your outside will be clean. Because when the tempter comes and says, hey, Pilgrim, check this out. Hey, what about this, man? He that is dead is freed from sin. So that old man's got to go. But the battle will be in your mind. You know, those guys had to change us in 12 weeks. Now, if the church was set up that way and we had qualified elders that could take you out and do some knuckle drill and beat the crap out of you out behind the church building, we'd probably become spiritual a lot quicker. But that's really not how it's going to be done. We have to discipline ourselves, which makes it tougher. How far are you willing to go in this, see? I remember reading about, you know, some of this Navy SEAL training one time, and the instructor said, you know, we can't produce that in these people. The conviction, the drive to be successful, to succeed, and to win the Trident, to become a Navy SEAL. He said, we can't produce it. Otherwise, we would. We would grab 50 guys and we'd make them, you know, warriors at that level. He said, we can't do that. We don't know how to. It's you know, what we do, he said, is we reveal it in them. That's all that's happened to you and me right now as Christians. God ain't going to make you do nothing. Know this, you've got the capability. That's one thing they don't necessarily have. We do, because we're made for it. We're fearfully and wonderfully made. We are made for this. Now, we, many times, don't even know what our capability is. Well, that's what that trial is for. That's what boot camp is for. Because it will reveal it. That's what football summer camp is all about. To find out what young guys are going to play in the fall. Because they're going to find out in the summertime. You know, not only your skills and what that you'll bring, abilities you'll bring, but who can hack it. Some guys will quit summer camp Because, you know, I ain't doing that. Well, that's good information. Need to find that out. Goodbye. Jesus said, look, it's a narrow, straight, narrow gate. There's a broad, wide way that leads to destruction. A lot of people going in there. But straight is the gate, narrow is the way that leads to life, and few will find it. Now, it's not like, you know, remember, God's not willing any should perish. So it's not like He's excluding them. They're excluding themselves. Those seals bring out that really what happens, you defeat yourself in that process. You're defeated in your mind. You know, they wrap up their thing in their training with a hell week, they call it, where they really put them through it. And what the instructors tell them, stay in the moment. Do not think down to the next days ahead. Stay only in the moment. Does that sound like a familiar passage right out of the Sermon on the Mount when Jesus said, don't take no thought for tomorrow? Sufficient unto the day is the evil thereof. Don't think down there. Stay in the moment. Stay right now. Because if you look down that long road of what all's coming, you will defeat yourself in your own mind. You'll end up quitting. Or trying to find some way to get around what you have to do. Become some fair weather boy along the side somewhere. Showing up, you know, and dressing pretty. But really, behind closed doors and what you're up to, same old garbage. Because you won't deal with yourself. But fiery trials are designed to bring out what is actually the real deal going on with us. And through that process, our character will be developed. A Christ-like character where the dross is all burned off. When He gave them the sword in their hand to take the land, the whole reason for that was, in the process of taking the land, they would be worthy to hold it, to have it, to dwell in it, to occupy it. But that process of taking it was going to make them the kind of people that were worthy of that new abundant life in a land flowing with milk and honey. We're going to be worthy for eternal life with God because through this very short period of time, which is only a light affliction for a moment, is producing in us a far more greater weight of glory going through the process. Expect it. In fact, as James says, delight in it, man. Count it all joy. Realizing that is what is happening to you. And it's a good thing. Don't be discouraged. Lift up the hands that hang down and the feeble knees. You know, make straight paths for the feet. It's okay. We have not yet resisted under the bloodshed, striving against sin. He said, get up, get going. You can do it. We can do it. But it's got to start with us first. We're the guys. That mantle falls on us here, at home, and in the community. So we need to let the light shine in difficult times. Thanks for your attention this morning, guys.
I shut this baby off here. Hold it in.